Broadcasting from the heartland of America.
In the Hoosier Media Network studios.
The next generation in conservative talk radio. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. What's up? Welcome into it. It is hour number two of the weekend edition of the Voice of Reason. So great to have you along for the ride as usual. Great hour number one, man. We kicked it off right out of the gate. We got so much more to talk about and so little time to do it here, as we do every single week. Great to have you. Radio, TV, live streaming, and podcasting. Broadcasting right here out of the heart of the nation in Wichita, Kansas. Yes, your flyover nation, your flyover country, as we broadcast out of the Hoosier Media Network studios. Welcome aboard your millennial general reporting for duty like we do every single day. Bottom of this hour, my congressman, he's a great friend. I've known him for a very long time, Congressman Ron Estes from the 4th Congressional District in Kansas. He'll be joining us. We're going to talk about a recap of the State of the Union, but we're also going to talk about the appropriations bills that they're working on. They have passed six of the 12 right now. We'll talk about what's going on in Washington, D.C., some of the conversations, government spending, and so much more. He is on the Ways and Means Committee in the House, so he's kind of a financial guy. For those that don't know, kind of a background here. When I first started in my radio broadcasting career about 12 years ago, I was broadcasting, and we're actually on that station right now, part of the company that I work for right now, still during my weekday job, and they broadcast my syndicated show as well. In Garden City, Kansas, little bitty Garden City, Kansas, KIUL 1,000-watt station out of Garden City. Wonderful little station. I love it out there. That's where I first started my career as soon as I got out of broadcasting school. And when I was working there doing the morning show, Ron Estes was running for state treasurer. And I met him there. He came out. I sat down with him in studio, had a great interview, got to be friends with him, got to chat with him. Wonderful guy. And he became state treasurer. was in that position for a good long time. Then when I moved to Wichita so many years ago, he was still state treasurer and he was running for the congressional seat. Remembered our interview. We picked it right back up. It had been years since we had chatted and now we're kind of BFF. So yeah, we'll have him on the program coming up at the bottom of the hour. Now that he's up there in the Ways and Means Committee, we'll talk about appropriations and federal budgets. And of course the ridiculous State of the Union, where I got a little angry at times. And luckily, my wife gave me newspaper to throw at the TV instead of baseballs, because I would have been throwing something at the TV at some point. All right. Welcome into it. Chad, jump on here with me for just a moment. I got to admit, I am tired of these arguments. I am sick and tired of hearing about this every year. It's the same argument every single year. Should we do it? Why do we do it? What's going on? But for those just to be aware, whatever time you air this broadcast in your area, Sunday is daylight savings time, meaning yes. That you get to apparently jump ahead, you get to lose an hour of sleep, and for a week we get to hear about how people's risk of heart attacks are going up. We get to hear about the risk of car accidents. We get to hear about how people are trying to adjust with their rhythm. Every year we hear about this, and then there's always a movement, and actually in Kansas last year, there was a piece of legislation in our state trying to stay on the daylight savings time and keep it permanent all year long. But people always complain whenever we do this adjustment in the spring and in the fall. I got to admit, I'm kind of tired about hearing about these same dumb arguments every single year. Are you okay with these, Chad?
I am A-okay with it. I want daylight savings time. And I want,
you want it to stay put.
You want
it to stay put like that all year long?
Yes.
Okay.
Once we spring forward, just stay put. Don't change it, because it gives us a lot more time in the day to be able to get some things done after work.
So, you know, they did that for a while. Back in 1945, during World War II, they actually kept it on daylight savings because, number one, they were trying to conserve fuel. I don't know how that conserves fuel, because you just work a little bit longer in the day. So, or I guess you still get off at the same time. I don't know, but you just go in a little bit later. But they did it because of World War II. They were trying to be more efficient. They wanted to conserve fuel. They also tried to permanentize it in the 1970s, where it lasted for not very long before the state of Florida actually advocated to repeal that law of making it permanent, because they saw that numerous kids were actually getting hit by cars by trying to walk to school in the dark. So schools started to adjust by actually delaying their school time. So it didn't work out by doing it all year long, but they've tried it many times before, and apparently it just didn't go well. I don't care whether we keep it. I don't care whether we get rid of it. I'm just tired of the same arguments every single year. Like, oh, it's a heart attack. Be careful. It's on a Sunday, and it's like if you just change time zones. Suck it up and get used to it. I don't mean to be mean, but come on. Does it really increase heart attacks? Really? Are you just you know, complaining about it because you have something else to complain about.
But I lose kinda sleep drives me nuts. When we fall back.
Yeah, we get an extra hour of sleep. And then people are like, oh, I'm so tired. I got that extra hour of sleep and my body has to adjust. We always have something to complain about and it's kind of ridiculous. Guess what? It's a Sunday. You can sleep in for that extra hour and get adjusted, or you can wake up at that time to get adjusted and move slow on Sunday. Then when you go back to work on Monday, it'll be like a regular schedule again and it won't bother you. So suck it up and happy daylight savings time this weekend to you. That's what I got to say about that.
And to you.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. You you do you. All right, coming up, bottom of the hour, Congressman Ron Estes. I want to play one more time for you real quick. By the way, we are broadcasting out of Wichita, Kansas.
We'll do it live.
To Hoosier Media Network Studios. I want to play for you this campaign ad from Joe Biden again. He released it on Saturday. So, again, haha, hint, hint, wink, wink, perks of having a weekend program that's actually live, that he released this after the State of the Union because we're not going to hear from him for a while. After all the drugs that he got dosed up on just to try and be angry and yell through his entire State of the Union speech, he's going to be MIA for a bit trying to recover. So he planned it properly to now release a $30 million ad buy across the nation to attack Donald Trump and to talk about how great he is. Now, the main concern that Democrats have is what he's trying to address in this state of the or in this campaign ad, which is that he may be old, but he's not dementia-ridden, and he's not losing his mind. That's the whole argument that he's trying to make in this campaign ad, and he tries to do it right out of the gate. I may be old, but I'm not senile. And they play it throughout the entire ad, and then listen to the very end of this thing. Because at the very end, they try and play it as a normal, like the producer comes in and, can we do one more take? And then he says, oh, I'm totally fit and virile and totally fine. And they try to make fun of it and laugh it off. And they're desperate. You might want to cover up your desperation showing. They're desperate to make him sound like he's legitimate and he's able to continue on as president of the United States. As even Democrats are now showing, the number one issue on the polls is they're concerned about his age and his mental state. Even though he did the physical, he didn't do the physical or the mental test, the cognitive test with it. Where even doctors on The View were like, yeah, there were pieces of the health screening that they completely left out and didn't release to the public. Shocker! They didn't release the cognitive test, even though that's part of a basic physical that you get from the White House doctor. So they're trying to play this off. They're trying to laugh it off and trying to change the narrative of what people are actually concerned about. Listen to the end of this guy.
Look, I'm not a young guy. That's no secret. But here's the deal. I understand how to get things done for the American people. I led the country through the COVID crisis. Today, we have the strongest economy in the world. I passed a law that lowers prescription drug prices, caps insulin at $35 a month for seniors. For 4 years, Donald Trump tried to pass it. I got it done. Now we're rebuilding America. I passed the biggest law in history to combat climate change because our future depends on it. Donald Trump took away the freedom of women to choose. I'm determined to make Roe v. Wade the law of the land again. Donald Trump believes the job of the president is to take care of Donald Trump. I believe the job of the president is to fight for you, the American people, and that's what I'm doing. I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Can we do one more take?
Look, I'm very young, energetic, and handsome. What the hell am I doing this for?
Yeah, that's not an add-on from kind of some kind of spoof. It's not the Babylon Bee. It's not the Onion. That's in the ad at the end of it. I'm young. I'm attractive. I totally know what I'm doing. Like, that's in the ad trying to laugh this off. They're desperate to try and change this narrative, and I don't know that it's going to work, but golly, man, he's looking old. He speaks old. He just acts old, and they're doing everything they can to change that because they have to. And I don't know if it's going to work. Now, on the Republican side, we're dealing with our own issues right now. We do have our presumptive Republican nominee, which is former President Donald Trump. And the Super Tuesday showed that after the dominant victory that we saw last week, only losing to the state of Vermont by like 3 or 4 points to Nikki Haley, but dominating every other one. And I mean, in large fashion, making that statement known very strongly that he's going to do well. But the Republican Party itself has to get on board and recognize Donald Trump as that presumptive nominee, which we're finally starting to do is on Friday as we look at our Week in Review.
It's your Week in Review.
We had the change in power, the shifting of the gavel, so to speak, from the chair of the RNC as Ronna McDaniel has officially stepped down And the new chairman, Michael Whatley of North Carolina, the chairman of the North Carolina Republican Party, has taken the reins for the national RNC with Laura Trump being voted in unanimously as the co-chair.
Now, I'm stepping aside today because I have long promised to put the nominee and their plans for the RNC first. Winning the White House back is just too important for me to do otherwise. President Trump deserves to have the team he wants in place at the RNC. When I made the decision to step aside, there was no one else I supported to be the next chair more than Michael Whatley. Michael and I have had a very close relationship as he ran North Carolina. He ran to be my co-chair last year. I appointed him as general counsel, and he will be phenomenal on, I know, an issue President Trump cares deeply about, which is election integrity. I am rooting so hard for Michael and Laura's success, and I offer all the help and guidance I can to help ensure that you do succeed in your roles. And thank you for stepping up.
All right, that was Ronna McDaniel with her farewell speech at the RNC convention after the vote, with Michael Whatley taking the reins and becoming the new chair for the Republican Party, Laura Trump now being the co-chair as well. And I have to say, and this may be controversial, but I am slightly concerned. Look, congratulations. I'm glad it was endorsed by Donald Trump. Ronna McDaniel, she did her part, I guess you can say, for the best of her ability. We have to give her the proper farewell here on The Voice of Reason. Because, well, she didn't really do the best of job trying to actually campaign and rally around the best candidates for the Republican side, and has been very skeptical about trying to back Donald Trump in the best way possible. This shows the change in leadership, which is good. Michael Whatley's going to do a great job, was endorsed by Donald Trump to take the reins here, and was the front runner from the very beginning. That was the first name that popped up. But I am just, and again, this is my personal thing, I am slightly concerned with Laura Trump being the co-chair. Now, she's a business person, being the daughter-in-law of Donald Trump. She knows how to handle money. She knows apparently how to fundraise. She knows how to throw the support behind Donald Trump, obviously, which they're going to need from the RNC. So I get all of that. That's great. My concern is the long-term health of the Republican Party. And this is my personal opinion. You can disagree. It's totally fine. And I'm not like poo-pooing it or angry about it or think it's going to be bad right now. I am just slightly concerned of the potential quote-unquote dynasty, if we want to put it that way, of the future of the Republican Party and what dynasty that we're creating here. Is this good for the Republican Party? Is this healthy for the Republican Party to have a family, that is the Trump family, dominate and take over the entire Republican Party? Now, as of right now, Donald Trump is the face of the Republican Party. He's the face of the MAGA movement. He's the one that obviously started the MAGA movement. So everybody right now, there's not another candidate out there, because we tried it during the primaries and we saw how it all failed. Donald Trump is the face of this movement right now. But how long is that going to last? He's only got one more term in office. And if Laura Trump and other Trumps are in positions of leadership, does that mean that the Trump legacy is carrying on? Or does that mean that the conservative populist movement and the MAGA movement is carrying on after Trump? How healthy is it to have a dynasty? Because we don't like those. We're not for that. We're about a movement, not an individual person or family. And I am slightly concerned about that moving forward. Lots more coming up. Stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. It's your Patriot on the Prairie. This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, it is. So apparently I'm just upsetting everybody today. Totally okay. I'm reading some of the live video feeds and live audio feeds about the daylight savings time thing. People are like, Andy, you don't understand. It's difficult for that time adjustment. And I get it. It is a little bit of an adjustment. The worst adjustment I ever had was when I actually flew over to Sri Lanka. I was in between my junior and senior years of high school. I was working with a church group, and if you remember, it was during the May. Chad, do you remember this? The major tsunami that hit over in India, that was the Christmas of 2005. I went over there in July of 2006 afterwards to do tsunami relief and to do missions work for the church with an entire youth group. It was a lot of fun. But for those that don't know, Sri Lanka is literally down at the tip of the peak of India. So it's essentially India. It is exactly, I was in Pacific time. I was living in Colorado at the time. It was an exact 12-hour difference from Colorado to Sri Lanka. Kosgota is where we landed in the capital of Colombia or Colombo, Sri Lanka. And then we went to the little town of Kosgota, Sri Lanka. And it was exactly 12-hour difference. So 6A to 6P was the difference between the two. And that was the worst time change for me in my entire life. I took a day off because we were trying to clean up these buildings and clean up all the devastation, which 6 months later, it was still there. It was ridiculous. I was trying to clean it. We were trying to clean these up. I had to take a day. I was feeling sick. I was not feeling well. I thought I had gotten food poisoning because I ate some ice cream in a place where there's like no refrigeration. And I thought that I got like sick or poisoned or something, but I wasn't feeling well. I slept all night. I slept all the next day. I woke up for dinner time, ate some dinner. I went back to bed and I slept all the next night. And finally I woke up and I felt like a brand new human being and I finally got adjusted. So that was a wild change there. At 12 hours, it took me a little bit to adjust, but I slept for a day, essentially 2 days straight, day and a half. And after that, man, I felt great. I was ready to rock and roll out there for the whole month that we were there, which was a lot of fun. Anyways, yeah, time changed a little. Get it. I get it. It's different, but come on, man. Come on. We go through this every single year. We should be used to this by now. So especially with the now, I'm also getting the emails, which, by the way, if you want to reach out to the program, since we don't take calls on the program normally because we may not be live in your market, you can email me, which is HoosierMediaNetwork@gmail.com, HoosierMediaNetwork@gmail.com. You can also send me a message on our social media, and you can send me an email directly from the website, which is HoosierReason.com, and you can send me an email. I'm expecting your angry hate mail for the daylight savings thing and the Laura Trump thing. I know it. A lot of people are like, Andy, what are you talking about? This is great. The Trumps are fixing the party. The Trumps are fixing the nation. We need this. We need Laura Trump to be part of this RNC. And I get it. She's a business person. She's feisty. She works with the Trumps, so she knows how to run a business, how to get money, how to add revenue, how to go and collect and get donations. She knows how to do this stuff. And there's nothing against that. My concern is we're a party about a movement, not about an individual person or family. And right now, Donald Trump is the movement, is the face of the MAGA movement. I get it. But at the same time, we're about a movement. We're not about an individual family. And once Donald Trump's out of office, who's going to pick up that torch and carry it on? I don't want the MAGA movement to go away just because Donald Trump can't be president anymore. Which is why I think his presidential or vice presidential nominee is going to be an extremely important decision, because they could be essentially setting the stage for another 8-year reign of the MAGA movement when Trump's out of office. We need to have the proper person in place to do so. But who's that going to be? But Laura Trump being the co-chair of the RNC concerns me about a potential dynasty. We didn't like it under the Bush reign. We definitely didn't like it under the Clinton reign. We didn't like it right now with the potential of the Obama reign with Michelle Obama, who, by the way, said she's not going to be running for office. I don't want that to happen. I'm concerned about what that could do to the party in the long term unless we broaden the MAGA movement to someone other than just those that are involved in the actual Trump family. Not to think that she's not going to do a good job, but let's make sure that we're a strong party, not a strong family. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. Don't get mad at me. Congressman Ron Estes from the 4th District of Kansas. He'll be joining us when we come back right around the corner. Lots more to get to here on the weekend edition of The Voice of Reason. Stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. When Reason meets radio. This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Welcome back into the program. So great to have you along for the ride. As always, really happy to have my next guest here on the program. Is excited to have him on. He's my congressman from right here in the 4th Congressional District in the great state of Kansas. Happy to have on Congressman Ron Estes. Congressman, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Andy. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, it's always great to chat with you, especially with how busy you guys have been. And I'm sure that you got to enjoy a lot of popcorn during the show from the State of the Union on Thursday night, because I didn't expect him to yell the entire time. So, I mean, I listen to heavy metal music and I like a lot of yelling in my music, but that was just a little obnoxious, I think.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, this is the most partisan State of the Union that I've ever seen since the time I've been in Congress, or even before that as well. And it was a campaign rally that he was trying to convince the Democrat base that he was the candidate that they should be cheering around. And it didn't matter whether he said stuff that was true or said stuff that wasn't true. That was all part of the campaign stick.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Talk about what you expected. I know you wrote an op-ed piece beforehand about what Joe Biden should mention in the State of the Union compared to what he actually said, because it sounds like right out of the gate, he tried to reference World War II and the threats to democracy across the world. And then, of course, said that anybody associated with Donald Trump is part of that threat to democracy as well. I mean, it didn't start off on a very uniting message like normally we would try at least to appear to be during a State of the Union address.
Yeah, I mean, you think the whole purpose of the State of the Union is to talk about what's going on in the country. And instead, he focused on what I think is going to be their campaign pitch. Is they instead of standing on his record that Biden's accomplished or failed at accomplishing over the last 3 years, he's trying to attack and denigrate President Trump and anybody that might vote for President Trump. And that's not what we should be doing. And it's certainly not reflective of the real true state of the union. When you look at Bidenomics and that he brags about is just the pain and suffering that people are having when they go to the grocery store and go fill up their car with gas and seeing the open border and just thousands of people. I mean, in the month of December, there were almost as many as the population of Wichita, over 320,000 people cross the border illegally.
Yeah.
And that's what I op-ed before the State of the Union. What I said was, I don't know what the president's going to say, but what I hope he says is we need to have good physical security in our country, and he's going to reverse the policy decisions that he made to end the Trump policies that were working and create this open border and this unsafe environment. And that, you know, as president, he needs to be responsible to step up and make sure we could have physical security in the country. And also, I said the second thing that I hope he really talks about is financial security, is that, you know, we have $34.5 trillion debt and no end in sight. And his budgets have overspent what is coming on tax revenue. And that, you know, starting the next day, he's going to have all of his committee or all of his cabinet agencies to go focus on bringing forth a 10-year plan to balance the budget.
Yeah.
And to make sure that we can pay down the debt and not bankrupt the country going forward.
Yeah, well, he definitely didn't address any of that stuff during the State of the Union, because it was all about everything that I heard was everything's in shambles, which is odd because he's been the president of the United States for the past 3 years. So you would think that we would talk about the benefits and good things that are happening. But he talked about how bad things were. And the only way to solve them would be a bigger project and more spending and more investments, quote unquote, into these departments and agencies. When he touched on not only Ukraine and Israel, but then he talked about education. He talked about climate initiatives. All it was let's just create a new department, a new agency, a new program, and spend a lot more money. And all of a sudden, poof, these issues would go away. And that's what he's done the past 3 years. And obviously it hasn't worked.
Yeah. I mean, he's just gearing up for his election rhetoric and promising people all this money in order to get their vote. And it's a sad state of things when we've gotten to this fiscal state of the country that we're in.
Yeah.
Because of all the issues that he does. And, you know, the student loan, it's not a student loan forgiveness, a student loan transfer from the people that took the loans to everybody else, the taxpayers that expected to pay him back. So after the Supreme Court told him he couldn't do that, then he tried to figure out a way to do an end run around them. And it's just one thing after another that he's trying to break and trying to throw so much money at getting reelected.
Yeah, no, it is unfortunate. We're talking with Congressman Ron Estes from here in the 4th Congressional District of the great state of Kansas. Let's talk about for a minute, the budget and some of the appropriations. I know you guys have been working on the appropriation bills. You're set to vote on, what, 6 out of the 12 appropriation bills over the next week. We've seen the continuing resolutions just to go through weeks at a time trying to keep this going. How optimistic are you that we could pass some of these? Obviously, it's not going to fulfill the entire federal budget, but the fact that we're actually voting on an appropriations bill is the first time that we've seen us get this far into the game since like the Barack Obama era. So at least we're making some ground. What does that actually look like on your end?
Yeah, it really has been a lot of bad habits that have been come into play here. And, you know, we're fighting against this muscle memory of bad habits that instead of funding the government on the starting date of October 1st for each fiscal year, create a continuing resolution, because you can't decide how much you want to spend on everybody's pet projects, and then having a massive bloated omnibus spending bill that you have to pass before Christmas in order not to shut the government down. So Speaker Johnson's broken that, started to break that cycle, and we've broken appropriations down. Instead of all 12 bills coming due at one time, we've split them into two. And this past week, we passed the first six of them. And so we have appropriations bills out there. It's not the way the process should be done. They're not perfect bills, and perfect amounts of spending. And now we've got to pivot to the next six and focus on them. And actually, it's going to be a little bit more difficult with these next six, because it's the things that are most important. It's Department of Defense. It's Homeland Security, all of the things that my colleagues in the Democrat Party don't want to address and don't want to admit that that's the responsibility of the country, and instead they want to spend a whole lot more on Department of Labor and Department of Health and Human Services, and so that those are going to be arguments that have to be worked through.
Yeah, that is going to be a challenge for sure. Now, the appropriation bills that you guys originally worked on before the holidays, November, December last year, and the details that came out about them showed some decent cuts, some consolidation of projects, you know, ending the Waters of the U.S. rule in some of these. It seemed like that they were on the right track. How much different are they now compared to what you guys were working on at the end of 2023 before the holidays? Are they relatively similar, or have they been manipulated by the Democrat-run Senate that didn't like a lot of that you guys were doing?
The bills that we passed out of the House, we passed seven of the 12 bills out of the House before September 30th.
Yeah.
And there were some noticeable reductions in spending there. And it was basically, we were on target to meet what was done with the debt ceiling that was passed back in May, was that we'd have a cut and limit on increase in spending. And so we were focusing on getting that done. Obviously, I mean, the Republicans in the House are trying to punch above their weight in terms of getting their things passed, but we're only one half of one third of the government, and got the White House working against us and the Senate working against us. And so the final bills that came out weren't nearly as fiscally responsible as the ones that we've passed out of the House.
Sure.
Overall, there were some cuts in some programs and a few programs. There were some increases. Overall, there was a little bit of cut. It just wasn't nearly as much as what we've done in the House.
Yeah. Well, at least we're working slightly in the right direction, which is good news. There's a bigger issue, though, and I'm so glad that you mentioned this, because you had another op-ed coming out of the Fox News talking about federal debt and how bad that is, but also talking about personal debt. We've talked a lot about that on the program as well, because we can complain about the government spending out of control all they want to, but Congressman, we just saw the numbers about how credit card debt is working out to be one of the largest household income debts that we see across the nation. Student loans, obviously, being a major issue. People aren't downsizing or cutting back on their lifestyle, with inflation up still near 20-30% compared to the past 3 years under the Biden administration. We're just spending more to try to compensate for that, and it's not doing us any good. How important is it to actually focus on, I don't know, our own personal budget while we complain about the federal government spending out of control?
Well, it really is important. And the issue is, I say this over and over again, is inflation such a scourge. And it's a scourge particularly to middle income and lower income folks, because they have less discretionary spending or money that they have available to pay for the needs that you have, whether it's food, whether it's rent, whether it's gas for your car. Wealthier individuals can handle inflation a little bit better. But the number one goal ought to be to keep inflation down so that we don't have this ongoing tax. And the Biden administration went completely the opposite direction. And they threw out all this spending plans and started spending so much money in his first 2 years in office. And now we've been reaping the consequences of that since then. And if you look at where inflation is since President Biden came into office in January of 21, the actual cost of living has gone up over 18%. So basically, you're paying 18% more for the same goods, for the same carton of eggs, for the same, you know, gallon of gas, the same rent. On average, it's 18%. And so what people are getting strained by is they're having to use their credit cards to actually buy groceries. Yeah. And to focus on the day-to-day things. And that's going to set the stage for, you know, some terrible consequences when you have to pay next month's credit card bill and also buy groceries for
that. That is Congressman Ron Estes from the 4th Congressional District from the state of Kansas. We'll continue that conversation with him coming up right around the corner. Got to take a break right here on The Voice of Reason. One segment left. Don't go anywhere. Stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. America's safe space for common sense. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, it is. Welcome back into it. We continue our conversation with Congressman Ron Estes from the 4th District of Kansas.
Eventually, you're not going to be able to get out of this thing, and they don't care. They just say, well, look at that. And they use it, like we saw in the fourth quarter, they use it and say, well, look, that Americans are spending more money, that there's no recession going on, or we're not anywhere near a depression. We're not doing any of that because, look at that, the American people are spending money. But it's spending money on debt that's going to come back to bite them, and the bubble's going to burst at some point. And we're going into, Congressman, the summer season right now where gas is going to start going up. We're going to start going on trips again, and the normal summer cycle is going to happen to where we're not going to be able to control this bubble that I think is going to burst, I think, before the election. They can't contain this any longer.
Yeah, it's been remarkable to see that the Americans have been able to sustain this for so long. That they have been. And you know, basically they've run down all their savings. I mean, part of it was, savings were built up with a lot of the COVID stimulus money that was thrown out. But now almost all of that's gone and people are, paid through all their savings. They don't have enough money for, you know, an emergency, to be able to offset that if they have an illness or have a car breakdown or something that they need money for, and it's going to have some devastating consequences on a lot of Americans.
Yeah, it really is. Got a couple of minutes left here with Congressman Ron Estes, the 4th District of the great state of Kansas. You know, being on the Ways and Means Committee, obviously you have a hands-on ability to work on some of the budgetary stuff, the appropriation bills like we've talked about. But where are we at with the push to try and fund Ukraine and Israel right now? That conversation kind of dropped off a little bit after the immigration bill that failed in the Senate just a few weeks ago, where they tried to partner it with that. When the immigration bill fell, then they tried to push Ukraine and Israel funding standalone on its own in the Senate. That obviously didn't go anywhere. And Speaker Mike Johnson said that would be dead on arrival if it made it to the House as well. So are there still conversations, and how close are they of ramming that through with some of the appropriations you guys are working on right now?
Well, I think there's conversations, and I think we need to be having conversations about you know, what we do as a world leader. But what Speaker Johnson's driving, and I'm supportive of him in this process, is that let's talk about protecting Ukraine's borders. Let's talk about protecting Israel's borders, but let's also talk about protecting the United States' borders.
Yeah.
And that's the piece that the President Biden doesn't want to own up to. He doesn't want to face that. So it's we're having a difficult time getting through to the Democrats in the Senate and the White House that, you know, we can look at the role of America as a leader, but we also need to make sure that we protect and defend our country as well in that process. And so it's for some reason they don't want to admit that. They don't want to engage in that conversation. And until we address border security, it's hard to say that we should go protect borders in other countries.
Well, no, and it's wild, Congressman. We saw it during the State of the Union, was that while even, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, while, you know, people can say whether that was called for or not during the calling out, during that conversation and yelling at Joe Biden about the incidences that have happened here, that Joe Biden has blamed Republicans for not passing a bill. I'm sorry, Congressman. I thought that he's brought in over 10 million people for the past three years in his administration. And we find out that he's flying people into the country in the sums of near 300,000 as well. They're already here. What bill could we have passed to have stopped what happened here just a few weeks ago?
Yeah, I mean, the issue is the president does not need any new laws in order to protect the border. President Trump did it with the current laws. It's President Biden who made the choice to go out and issue these 60, 70, 80, 90, depends on which number of executive orders you want to include in the mix. That's actually sent the signal around the world that you should send people here. Yeah. And we're seeing gang members coming in. We're seeing Chinese nationalists. We're seeing people from countries all over the world, not just Mexico and South America. But they've been given the signal by the president's administration that they get a free rein to come here. And it's if he would just reverse all of his executive orders using the existing laws, we could protect the border.
Yeah. What a concept. There it is, Congressman Ron Estes from the 4th Congressional District, my home district here in the great state of Kansas. Sounds like we got a lot of work to do. And right now, according to some of the senators, there is no legitimate bill on the table being discussed right now when it comes to immigration policy. So we have a lot of work to do, plus the second half of the appropriation bills that will be voted on later on this week. While they're not the best bills, they're at least the first appropriation bills that will actually get passed, and maybe a first full federal budget passed since the Bush administration. Think about that one. And we're 6 months into the federal budget. So there's that as well. Not going to change a whole lot, but I guess if you want to look at it in government terms, it's a step in the right direction. That does it for us today. Back at it again next weekend. Until then, have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy your daylight savings time. This is The Voice of Reason. I'm Andy Hoosier. We'll see you on the radio.